Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Yeah, we kind of got a little mixed up in our order. I was supposed to read the scripture, so I apologize, Wendy. No, it's okay. It wasn't a very positive scripture passage, was it, actually? I mean, it was really kind of a bad moment there. It's actually not the Apostle Peter's finest moment. I would say it was probably one of his worst moments in his life, to deny the Lord. Do we ever do something like that where we really blow it? I know I do, and I'm not all that unique, so I'm pretty sure there's other people out there that blow it. And how do we feel? We feel like there might not be very much hope for us. I think we've all had those days. But there's always hope. There was for Peter, and I know that there is for us as well. Does anyone here think that they might be the black sheep of their family? You don't have to raise your hand. Maybe you're the kid in the family who got in the most trouble, or you're the type of person that just can't keep your thoughts to yourself. Maybe you're impulsive and you say the wrong thing at the wrong time, or you do things without really considering the consequences. My older brother, Brad, he's a year older than I am, he was always in the most trouble when we were in children. From the time he was a toddler, he was just into everything. My mother still loves to tell the stories about the things that he did. He does not like it when she does that. When he was a toddler, he ate dog food. He ate lipstick from my mother's purse. He ate drain cleaner, which necessitated a trip to the emergency room. His tongue was really fat and swollen. He was about 7 when he decided to start a fire in the basement of our rented home to play Indian Chief. Not politically correct. My personal favorite is when he was 17 and he decided that he wanted to use the barbecue in the backyard, those little hibachis. I don't know if any of you remember those, but they sat on the ground. Was not supposed to do that, of course. He had a really bad fascination with fire. There are other stories I could tell you. But he did it anyway, and when he realized what he had done, he opted for the decision to spray paint the grass green in order to hide his crime. But then my dad mowed the lawn, and it was revealed that he'd been doing this, and of course he got in trouble. And then there was the time when he and my husband decided that they would jump from the fence into the pool in our backyard. So that was, you don't remember that. My mother remembers that. But of course he grew up and he became more responsible, and we're just deciding whether or not Neil is more responsible now as well. But that's a good way to describe Peter. He was impulsive. He spoke too soon, too often, and too quickly. And we're going to look at some of the events in his life that sort of shows that, so that we can sort of get a good example of just what that looks like and what that meant for Peter. In the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 14, Matthew gives an account of Jesus feeding a large number of people. The crowds are following him and he has compassion on them. They have the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes. Jesus performs a miracle and they are all fed until they're satisfied. They have 12 baskets of leftovers. And after that, he tells his disciples to get into a boat and go across the water. So I'm just going to start reading at chapter 14, verse 23. After he had dismissed them, he went up to a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from the land, buffeted by the waves, because the wind was against it. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, came toward Jesus, but when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." So there's Peter. He sees Jesus, and he calls out, and he doesn't even hesitate. He just gets out there and walks on the water. But what happens when he gets out there? All of a sudden, he looks around and thinks, I'm on the water. And he's afraid. And he says, save me. So Peter really wasn't actually thinking about what he was doing. None of the other disciples got on the water. They were probably thinking, I'm not getting on that water. But he didn't really think about it. He just went ahead and did it. And that's one of the first sort of evidences that you can see that Peter kind of continues to do things like this. Later on, in Matthew chapter 16, we see something else that Peter does. When they came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, who do people say the Son of Man is? They replied, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets. But what about you, he asked, who do you say that I am? Simon Peter answered, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Jesus replied, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. So here they are walking along with Jesus, having those nice teaching times that Jesus had with them as they would walk along and go from place to place. And he asks them, who do people say that I am? And he's testing them just to see. He probably already knew who people said he was, but he was sort of testing his disciples. What did they know? And who is the first one to answer? It's Peter. But he gives the right answer. He says Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And he says, you're Peter, and you're blessed because my Father in heaven has told you this. And on top of that, he promises Peter some very significant things. He says that Peter has a new name. His name was Simon, the son of Jonah, or son of John, but Jesus gives him the name Peter, and that's significant because the name Peter, where we get the name Peter, is from the Greek word Petros, and the word Petros means rock. So he's changing Peter's name to rock. So that's a strong rock. You're solid. And then he said he's going to build his kingdom on him. And that kind of sounds weird. And I'm not going to spend too much time talking about that because there's thousands of years of academic scholarship talking about just what did Jesus mean when he said that. But there are kind of two ways of looking at it. Roman Catholics will say that the church has been built on Peter, so that all the popes that followed Peter all get their authority from Peter. But Protestants, we're Protestant, we believe that he meant the confession that Jesus gives, you're the Messiah, that Peter gives, you're the Messiah. That's what Jesus is going to build the church on, the confession that he is the Messiah. And it doesn't really matter exactly what it means, but it does show us that he was giving Peter something very special. He was giving him an aspect of authority in the future. But what's interesting is what happens next. In the same chapter, right after that, it says in Matthew chapter 16, verse 21, from that time Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Never, Lord, he said, this will never happen to you. Jesus turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. So this is right after he's just been given this, oh, you're going to have the keys to the kingdom. I'm going to build my church on you. And now Jesus says, I'm going to be offered up as a sacrifice. He's going to be killed and raised to life. It was probably not the news that they were hoping for. And they're like, no, Lord, this is not happening. And Jesus says to Peter, when he says, no, Lord, get behind me, Satan. That's a bad thing. You don't want to be called Satan. So he goes from being this rock, this firm person, to being a stumbling block just in an instant. And that's awkward. Maybe he should have just let somebody else answer that question that Jesus had for them. Later in Matthew's gospel, Jesus and the disciples are observing the Lord's Supper. Judas has already gone to the religious leaders and sold Jesus out. And then in Matthew chapter 26, 31, Jesus tells his disciples, you're all going to fall away from me. Something else they probably really did not want to hear. Matthew 26, verse 31. Then Jesus told them, "This very night you will fall away on account of me, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I have risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee." And Peter replied, there's Peter again, first person to speak, "Even if all fall away from you, I never will." "Truly, I tell you," Jesus answered, "this very night before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times." But Peter said, "Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you." And all the other disciples said the same. He says that everyone's going to fall away from them. And we know the end of the story. Everyone did fall away from them. But Peter says, "No, no, I'm not going to, I'm not going to." Peter always has this great answer, "Oh, I'm not going to disown you." But we already know that he did. So something seems kind of off here. Peter, though, has the particularly devastating experience, and that was from the scripture passage that Wendy read earlier. And it was probably Peter's worst moment. First, a servant girl recognizes him. He has followed along. When they came to take Jesus away, the leaders take him away. And Peter, Luke's gospel says specifically that Peter was following along behind. He wanted to know what was happening. And so he's in the courtyard to where they have taken Jesus. And first a servant girl recognizes Peter was with Jesus. And so she asks him, he said, "I don't know what you're talking about." So that's number one. And then he goes a little further into the courtyard to the gate where they had taken Jesus. And then another servant girl recognizes him, and she tells people all around him, "This guy was with Jesus." And again, he says, "No." And this time it says that he called down an oath. So it's like he's saying, "I swear I was never with Jesus." And then somebody else says to him, "You are one of Jesus' followers. We can tell by your accent." They were from Galilee, and they had an accent. It's just like if you walk around somewhere and the guy's speaking English to you. If he's from Newfoundland, you'll probably know because there's just a different way of sounding. But she recognized him, and he said, "No, that's not me." And he came, was like giving curses and calling down the oath. And Matthew says, immediately a rooster crowed. And what is Peter's reaction? He weeps bitterly. And it has to be the worst moment of his life. He'd been following Jesus for 3 years. He loved him. He recognized who he was. But when it came down to it, he really botched things up and he wept bitterly. Have you ever felt like you have just absolutely blown it? Have you ever wept bitterly over something that you've done that you know was a mistake? We all make mistakes. We're all human. We're not designed to be perfect. And we all mess up sometimes. When my first child was born, I decided that I would not go back to work. Just decided I wanted to stay at home and take care of her. And as time went on, just didn't really seem like a good time. And then all of a sudden I have three kids. And I thought, yeah, I just really want to serve God by taking care of my family. And so I put all of my energy into that, and some people already know this about me, but when I usually do something, it's like I jump in with both feet, and I give 100%, and that's what I did. And of course, there were bumps along the way, because any of you that have children, you know that this happens. But there did come a point in my life when I realized that I had made some pretty bad mistakes as a parent, and I knew it because my children told me what those mistakes were. More than once. There's something very humbling about having an adult child come to you and tell you that you've really messed up. Because you know, if you're mothers, you sit in the dark of the night and you wonder, have I made any mistakes? And then someone comes and confirms that. And it can be hard. And I felt like Peter did when he realized that he had let Jesus down. And I thought to myself, God gave you one job. One job, and you couldn't do that right. And it really, really bothered me. It still does, but I'm learning to live alongside that. But God hasn't stopped loving me. He's not going to stop using me. He's not finished with me. And he wasn't finished with Peter either. Let's remember back those verses. Jesus promised him some pretty significant things. He said, you're going to have the keys to the kingdom. The gates of hell are not going to stand against it, and I'm going to build my church. So he was not done with Peter. And we see that in the Gospel of John, chapter 21, after Jesus has been crucified, they are out on the water. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize it was Jesus. Another one of those out on the water and Jesus, who are you, stories. He called out to them, friends, have you had any fish? No, they answered. He said, throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some. And when they did, they were unable to haul them into the net because of the large number of fish. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, it's the Lord. As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, it's the Lord, he wrapped his outer garment around him and jumped into the water. Sound familiar? And then the other disciples followed them in the boat. So there's Peter out in the water again. But imagine how they felt. Their leader is dead. They don't really understand it. And they don't recognize this person on the beach. But I wonder if, you know, with the whole water and fishing and miracles happening, if they started to think, gee, who this is. Whatever it was, when they recognized him, Peter was the first one out of the boat again. And you kind of have to give him credit a little bit for enthusiasm. Because even people, sometimes when people are very impulsive, it's generally because they just have a lot of passion and they just want to get out there. And that's what he does. And it's reminiscent of him walking on the water. This time he didn't say, help me, Lord. He just went out to him. And then after this, they have a little fish fry on the beach and they eat bread and fish, which is yet another familiar thing. And Matthew says that it was the third time that he had seen them since he was resurrected. And they're still a little uncertain. And sometimes, you know, the disciples seemed kind of clueless. But we have to remember that they were regular people. And we have the end of the story. They didn't have the end of the story. Just think about what we would do if somebody that we loved was publicly executed, died, reputed to have risen again, and then all of a sudden starts showing up in our neighborhood. I think I can excuse the disciples being confused because I would totally freak out if that happened. But there's a couple things that happen further after, and it's really a great climax to the whole story of Peter, is that they have this face-to-face confrontation, he and Jesus, because you know what happened, and you kind of think, he can't really leave that alone, can he? So it says in chapter 21, verse 15, Peter and Jesus have a little talk. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus had asked him a third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. So how many times does he ask Peter, Jesus asked Peter, do you love me? Three times. And how many times did he say, I don't know the man? Three times. So I think Jesus is acknowledging to Peter, yes, you really did mess up. I know that you did this. Of course, he knows all things. But he's telling Peter, I know that you did this. But he also gives him three jobs to do. It's basically the same job. But he says three times, feed my sheep. Feed my lambs. Feed my sheep. And in the Gospel of John, the image of the shepherd, Jesus as the good shepherd, and his people as his sheep is full in the Gospel of John. That's one of the biggest themes in the book. He is basically saying, I'm giving you my beloved people to take care of them. So even though he's done this thing, he is still being used by God. And this should encourage us that God will use us no matter how many times we drop the ball. When we fall, he'll pick us up. And we know that he will not turn away from us. It reminds us that God has all kinds of servants. Peter was a well-known servant, we know who he was, but even the anonymous ones out there, and you know, basically we're all pretty anonymous, it doesn't really matter what we've done, God is going to pick us up, and he's going to use us. No matter how impulsive we are, no matter how many times we make a mistake, God does not require us to be a superhero. He just wants a willing heart. If you've had a similar experience to mine when you've made mistakes with your kids, just like Peter's story is not over, neither is yours, neither is mine. Things can repair. We can move on. We can be used by God. God can use us every single day in every ordinary moment of our lives. Sometimes in our culture, we get really caught up that everything has to be big. You know, you can't really serve God unless you go to a foreign mission field. You can't really serve God unless you give everything to the poor and live on the street. You can't serve God unless you're speaking up in front of people. You can't serve God unless you're doing whatever. But the majority of life is in the ordinary moments. And the majority of service to God is in the ordinary moments of life. And we can be used by that as long as we have a willing heart. Peter was impulsive, but he was willing. It's better than turning tail and running. He kept going. Peter's one of my favorite people in the Bible because I really get him. I am guilty of saying things that I shouldn't. I'm very direct and sometimes blunt. And there are times over the years when I look back when I was teaching Sunday school that I think to myself, what was the matter with you? Why did you say something like that? And there's also been times when I've wanted to take my former self and go up to her and just say, be quiet, because you said too much. And of course I can't do that. Neil and I taught teen Sunday school for many years. I also taught a ladies' Bible study. And one of the girls who had been in my Sunday school class as a teenager eventually showed up in my ladies' Bible study class after she got married. And one of the times she came to class, we were having a discussion, and she just all of a sudden to say, you know, Mrs. Shea, I remember, she still couldn't call me by my first name, even though she was married with children. I remember when you were in teen Sunday school class and you said this, and how much that just meant to me, and I remembered that. And I did not remember having said that. And I was just stunned that she had remembered something that I said. And it was not like, I remember what you said. It was, oh, I remember what you said. It wasn't that I'd done something wrong. It was that something good. And I thought, that was really encouraging to me. So we don't always know when we have made an impact on someone's life. We'd never know how our service to God is going to be used. I read somewhere recently where someone was talking about service, and he said, if you're serving with the expectation of seeing the results now, you're doing it wrong. Our service is meant to be more than just, I want to see tomorrow, I want to see next week. It needs to be, I want to see down the line. With our kids, you know, these young kids, one of them is going to remember some weird guy playing the bagpipes in church, and they're not going to know where that came from, but they'll remember it. And they might remember it in a good way. They might remember it in a bad way. So how can God use you? It doesn't have to be big, but how can God use you in the ordinary moments? And if you think God can't use you because you've made so many mistakes, just think about Peter. He made the biggest mistake you can ever make by denying who Jesus is. And he raised him up to serve him. So he's not looking for perfect servants. He's just looking for willing servants.